Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about holidays here and which we should celebrate and which we shouldn't. And Larry, I'm sure the reason for the question, and the question I'm sure was genuine regarding Thanksgiving, which is the next holiday coming up, is that Yahweh asks us to distance ourselves from our country, from religion, from politics and the like. And one way to do so is not to observe national customs. And so, you know, I would say that if you're celebrating Thanksgiving as a national holiday and you're vowing in prayer to thank your country for your freedoms and you're thanking your troops and you're celebrating the military and, you know, then you're in trouble. But if you turn it to a time where you're bringing your family together and celebrating family, and having direct conversation with you, you're not.
So, no, I have to agree with it. I don't see it as being tied to any kind of a religious belief at all.
Yeah.
My parents were atheists, and they had Thanksgiving, you know, and they weren't particularly nationalist or militaristic people either. So, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. So it's not an issue. You know, I don't think we ought to be celebrating war, however. For example, that all of the somber tones and the taps and the like and the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, end of World War II in Europe. No, it was a war that ought not have been fought, a war that arose because greedy individuals tried to impose their will and enrich themselves at the detriment of others. And it was a war that, to a large degree, we contributed to the development of that war. Adolf Hitler would never have risen to power had it not been for American investment.
It's a sad story. It's not like they are out there teaching this as general history, and it should be taught. You know, when you arm people, like with Daesh, ISIS today, you arm Daesh, and then you fight Daesh. I mean, it's shocking to me. It's really shocking that people can't see what in the hell is going on here. It can't be good. You know, you don't arm people that are just seriously sick savages.
No.
You know, and that's what
we're doing.
We're doing.
Yeah, and in Iraq, we're arming all sides. I mean, you can't say we're arming both sides because that leaves too many sides out. You know, we are we're bombing on behalf of Assad. We are arming the Islamic State through Qatar. We're arming the Islamic State through the Awakening Program in Iraq. We're arming the Kurds to go fight against them. We're arming the Iranians via the Iraqi military to turn their militias against them. And so we're supplying arms to everybody in that conflict, which is a purely religious conflict. It has no dimensions other than Sunni via Shiite.
And I'm sitting here going to work every day funding this nonsense, it. You know, it's an insane proposition. This goes
on. There's a news out today that there is a country that we refuse to sell weapons to.
Let me guess. Israel.
No. Well, we are constraining the, we are now selling 25 times the amount of weapons to Israel to Israel's avowed enemies that we are to Israel. And of course, we're running interference for Iran so Iran can finish its nuclear program. Iran announced yesterday that its intent was to destroy Israel.
They've announced that on a number of occasions.
Yeah. Okay. This country, I'm going to kind of narrow it down for you. All right, the country that we refused to sell American weapons to, and, you know, America is the merchant of death for the world. We sell more weapons than every other country combined by a huge margin. This particular country asked for the weapons because they have the most demonic Islamic insurgency within that country. It's a Islamic insurgency that's trying to establish Sharia law in part of the country, and that is using all of Mohammed's tactics. Kidnap.
That would be Nigeria. It'd be Nigeria.
That would be Nigeria. Boko Haram. Yeah. Nigeria wanted weapons, deadly American weapons, to attack Boko Haram, and America said no. I mean,
probably
I
at the insistence of the U.N.
The U.N. The U.N. didn't get involved. It was the Obaminator saying that the Nigerian government has a track record of human rights abuse, particularly within their army, and therefore we would not supply weapons. Now, it is true.
But the Janjaweed, they're okay, huh?
Yeah, yeah, it's true that the Nigerian government does have a track record of bad behavior. But, and as bad as they are, and they're bad, the group that they're fighting is almost infinitely worse.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, we're willing to provide weapons to al-Nusra and the Islamic State, and yet we're not willing to provide weapons to a country that wants to fight them.
You know, I wonder, I often wonder how the UN really, really does, you know, say they have a right to exist. You know, you got these, everybody knows the Janjaweed, you know, they're out there, you know, attacking, and, you know, what they do is they go in and they rape the women and they kill every man, woman, and child, and they burn the bodies and burn the village.
Yeah, and Darfur.
And all these villages are just sitting around waiting to be attacked next. Everybody knows it. The UN will send in observers, but they're not allowed to fight.
Yeah, Hollywood used to rally on behalf of them. It was interesting in the Sudan, and that's where the Darfur region is with the terrorist group that you're talking about.
But it's just an offshoot. I mean, it's all the same group.
But it's the Western Sudan, and what happened is that the Arab Islamic government in the Sudan overhunted Christians and animists. They killed almost 3 million of them over a course of about 25 years. And after overhunting them, they needed new prey, because once you've created militants whose lusts are satiated through robbery and rape, you need to have new prey. I mean, that was Muhammad's problems. It was Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan's and Tamerlane's issue. And so what they did is said, all right, we've overhunted Christians and animists. We can go after Muslims so long as we go after African Muslims, because they're inferior to Arab Muslims. And all
of
their
second language had to be Arabic. Isn't that it?
Right.
If your second language is Arabic, no matter what a good Muslim you are, because you couldn't be a good Muslim because your first language isn't Arabic, you've got to go. Yeah.
And so they used them as a means to rob and to rape. That's been going on for a very long time in the Sudan and Eastern Africa. And, of course, now the spread of Islam is catastrophic throughout Northern and Central Africa. And it was aided and abetted by the gargantuan mistake perpetrated by Obama and John McCain, when they decided that it would be appropriate to label jihadists, fundamentalist Muslims, freedom fighters, to change their perception from being ruthless jihadists, fundamentalist Muslims, to freedom fighters, and to provide them with all manner of weapons so that they could go after Gaddafi. And when they prevailed and took out Gaddafi, they created a terrorist state in Libya that is literally swimming in American weapons. And so their economy now is selling those weapons to other fundamentalist Islamic groups throughout Africa. And they are the impetus behind the terror that's taking place in the Sinai now, the terror that's taking place in Central African Republic and Mali, and Boko Haram is armed by them. So we created quite a mess.
I know a journalist, a black journalist over in Kenya, mm-hmm. and what she had told me was that they rewrote, now, of course, we're getting into Southern Africa, but The Obama administration funded the rewriting of a new constitution, and the person who oversaw this was Desmond Tutu. You know, when you see this guy coming, you better be running.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they wrote into the new constitution in Kenya, and this was some 3 or 4 years ago, and the U.S. taxpayer paid for it, is that you cannot say anything negative about Islam or it's a hate speech.
Right. Yeah, it's
you know, this open spreading of Islam is a little disconcerting from my standpoint, should be from most Americans' standpoint. Even Christians should be upset about that. But
correct.
Seemingly nothing is done about it. I mean, why would you do such a thing?
Because you're in support of Islam, because you want
to be seen. That would be the only thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, speaking of Islam, the U.S. and the military, U.S. Launched a drone strike against what it called militants, which would be fundamentalist Muslims, although they don't want to refer to them as fundamentalist Muslims, in northwest Pakistan. We bombed a home. We haven't a clue as to how many people we killed. We don't even know if it was death tolls vary from 4 to 7. We don't know if we killed women and children or if we killed Taliban. We don't know if anybody that we killed was actually armed. We don't know if anybody we killed actually threatened or killed an American. In fact, you know, the overwhelming preponderance.
That's a great way to make American enemies, by the way. Just
of course.
Arbitrarily bomb people. You know.
About 4 years ago, Pakistani expatriates were given the opportunity to testify to Congress. And in their testimony, they ubiquitously said, without exception, unanimously proclaimed that our drone attacks in Pakistan were counterproductive, that we were literally creating rage against the United States, hatred towards the United States, and we were empowering the fundamentalist Muslims by bombing them, by declaring war on them. We were creating a much more positive view of them and hatred for the United States. Yeah, it's that whole program is counterproductive. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're having a conversation with Larry about the United States and its propensity to provide weapons unless those weapons are going to be used to fight Islam. And it is a sorry state of affairs. But we did use a drone to manufacture more Muslims in Pakistan. What's so sad about this is that it's another case of America making its next enemy, Larry. The Taliban was created by the Pakistani ISI and the Pakistani military, which the ISI reports is part of. That's their version of RCIA. And
they work closely with the CIA, by the way.
They do. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, it was the American CIA that carried out Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski's desire to use the Taliban, to rent the Taliban from the Pakistani government. So the part of America that clandestinely supplied the weapons to the Taliban for them to fight the Soviet-backed government was the CIA. And so we provided them with the weapons that they then used to take over Afghanistan, because the Taliban was actually created by the ISI for the express purpose of influencing Afghanistan. And the reason the Pakistanis wanted to influence Afghanistan is the same reason we mentioned earlier in the program, that the Pakistanis wanted the revenue that would be generated by having oil and gas pipelines transition its territory if it could use Afghanistan as a go-between to the Caspian Sea oil and gas reserve. So that's why they created the Taliban, to take control of Afghanistan on behalf of Pakistan. That's the reason why the U.S. under Zbigniew Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter rented them, because they were already in place for that specific purpose. And then we created clandestinely. Even Reagan played this game, provided weapons to them. Then, of course, once the Taliban prevailed and took over Afghanistan, they were worse than the Russians, much worse. So what we did to the Afghan people was hellish. You know, we brought a civil war on them that killed millions of them and displaced millions more. And then we enabled the Taliban, because we were arming them, to take over that country. And then the United States decided that we were going to invade Afghanistan and rid Afghanistan of the very Taliban that we had armed.
It's bizarre. You know, one of the things that goes on now is
God bless America.
Jay, he says woe to America, and we know that.
I'm being facetious.
No,
yes.
I know you are, but yes. I have to tell you, you know, when JSOC really take over in all these clandestine operations within the war front, and basically JSOC runs most of the operations now. And what happens, it's sort of like, you know, it's an ongoing affair. Remember when we first went into Iraq, there were, you know, these 52 cards? Remember
cards? Oh, yes,
you know,
death cards. Right,
cards. And then once you get these 52, see, then you get people and you start saying, well, he's involved. And then the decks of cards becomes decks of cards. And before you know it, you've got people out here just furthering the war, furthering it. We can't stop now. We've got them on the run. And pretty soon you're blowing up people that are having a dance party at their house.
Yeah, and of course the reality here is that we have to share the propaganda that we are somehow debilitating this enemy, but yet that the enemy never dies. It's like we've been at war with Al-Qaeda, and we have made certain that Al-Qaeda has been severely crippled, but they're not done, so we must keep up the battle. So it's always the enemy is dying, but the enemy is still alive.
It's ongoing, and that's why you're down to blowing up civilians. I mean, even in Afghanistan too. I mean, it's not just particular to Iraq. It's Afghanistan as well. You know, they get in these mountain regions and they go, okay, we've got some intel to wipe out this, and boom, next thing you know, they wipe out a whole family inside a house. And they go, well, they killed my sister-in-law, my grandson, then they took my son away. You know, and what these people were doing were having some kind of dance party. I mean, really, it's getting to that point. And it gets to the point where it plays out to where you can't even sell it to the military any longer. You know
what's amazing, too, is that in the U.S. Constitution forbids the government doing anything that forecloses on a person's ability to practice their religion. And yet every one of our drone attacks in the Middle East has been to kill people who are practicing their religion. I think we've got some hypocrisy here. Welcome back to Shattering This. I've got another great story here for you. And Larry, over the weekend, he did it on a Friday. One of the things you learn in business, if you've got bad news, you always release the bad news on Friday afternoon. If you've got great news, you release it on Monday morning because they most people will have forgotten about it.
Right,
the news
cycle,
yeah, shows back up. Mm-hmm. So the Abominator announced a doubling of U.S. combat troops for Iraq, but even though they're all combat troops, all are ordered to go. There are no volunteers in this case, and there are, and they will all have boots. And I can assure you, gravity does work in Iraq. And they
boots on the ground.
He also said that they're going to be deployed in Anbar province, which is of course the stronghold of the Islamic State. So would you call this, there's a term called mission creep, where it's like Vietnam, where you start with 500 advisors, and then it becomes 500 advisors becomes 5,000 advisors, and then 5,000 advisors have to have troops around them to protect them. So that then becomes 50,000, and then the 50,000 need more to prevail against an ever-escalating enemy and the dastardly deeds of that enemy, and 500,000 becomes a, who knows. So I think we have mission creep, but we're told that the boots will not be on the ground in Iraq. So it is
really
gravity.
Where are they going to be in this province? Floating around somewhere?
Yes,
I mean, this is insanity. This is like saying ISIS is not Islamic. I guess he forgot what the I meant. You know, why doesn't he just call them what they are, Daesh, anyway? But I'm blown away. I'm blown away at the lame words that these people use and they get away with.
Yes.
It's shocking.
Yes.
It's shocking.
Yeah. How dishonest America's media, military, and political leaders have become, and how few people seem to care. The only thing I can assume, Larry, is that that's a consequence of political correctness, of the indoctrination that young people have received in our educational establishments, to the point where they're unable to exercise good judgment. They're unable and unwilling to be moral in their interpretation of information, so they can't be discriminating anymore. And if you can't be discriminating, you can't exercise good judgment, then who are you to even care? First of all, who are you to determine that you're being lied to? And then why would you even care?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. One of the things that I've been noticing, you know, you see more and more and more military films coming out. Honoring the military.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's World War II, it doesn't matter Vietnam, it doesn't matter if it's SEAL Team 6, it doesn't matter what it is. More and more books and movies are coming out to advance the war cause. And, you know, these are very, very powerful propaganda tools. These are tools that Hitler employed. And, of course, today, the propaganda tools are so much better. You know, they would make Hitler blush.
I did see a movie that you've seen called Fury over the weekend. And,
that wasn't pretty,
You know, and it shows a number of things that are helpful for people to understand. One, of course, is that lies permeate war, and the people who prosecute war are disgusting.
Absolutely.
You know, and they're disgusting, morally disgusting. They're reprehensible in terms of their behavior, and they have to have a cognitive dissonance between the reality that they're actually part of and the rhetoric that supports the glory of all of this. And it shows that pretty well. It also shows how God is cited on behalf of the military man is, you know, I'm going to do God's will. How many times in that movie did you have somebody says, you know, I'm doing God's will. If we're doing God's will, you know, we're where we should be.
And it was
God's
pretty empty rhetoric, wasn't it? It was pretty empty rhetoric. You know, the Germans felt the same way. You know that. They were doing God's will. You know that.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's their God happened to have a funny little mustache,
I'm totally agreeing with that. It's just nonsense, but that was what was in their psyche.
Their prophet was quite insane, but nonetheless, yes.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that bothered me about it is that the sergeant that was in charge of the tank was depicted heroically trying to save the life of his men, while in the process of, rather than sparing lives, slaughtering hundreds of people, and the kid that survived the slaughter of hundreds was declared a hero. I mean, that's how we manufacture our heroes. And there's nothing heroic about choosing, and he made the choice to kill. They weren't defending themselves. They hunkered down in that tank at the end scene because he chose to go out killing and to take as many enemy as possible with him. And, I did not find it heroic. And yet that's how it's presented. You'll have... You know, the players of video games now, as young people, saying, "Yeah, I want to be a hero too." And you know,
that's the intent. That's the desired intent of making those movies. I mean, one of the things that Brad Pitt did say in the movie, which I found to be true. He was talking and he was saying, well, this war is over. I mean, it's all but over. I mean, when we were crossing the river and going into Germany at that point, and then the Brits were as well, and the Russians on the other side, it was, for all intents and purposes, over. He says, but still, a lot more people have to die.
That's right.
I thought, that's about right. You know, this war is over, but a lot more people have to die.
And they did. By the by the millions. By the millions.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, we look here at the situation with Iraq. Why don't you tell me how it's possible to send the American ground troops over to Iraq and not have the combat troops in Iraq, not have boots on the ground? How is that even? Why would anybody in their right mind believe the president says we're not going to engage in another ground war and you're sending ground troops to Iraq?
How many is he sending? And I'm sure I'm taking that this was the Friday night announcement. How many is he sending?
He requested another $5 billion to pay for these troops, and it's another 1,500 U.S. Troops to Iraq. And the reality is that the number of Americans in the Baghdad area now is probably close to 10,000.
If they say 1,500, it's much higher than that. That's because they can't hide it anymore. That's all they're doing. They're coming out. Like you said, when you get the bad news, you put it out front. That's all that's happening.
See, what he's doing, he's not counting the 5,000 CIA and State Department that were already in Iraq. And there's really no difference now in the CIA and the military. They're all in cahoots. They're all working together. And it wasn't counting the original troops that were deployed to protect them. And then he sent in 500 more troops to protect the troops that were protecting the CIA in Baghdad. And they're not counting those. And then he sent 1,500 and said, you know, these will just be advisors. And now he doubled down on that 1,500, but he's doubling down on on one small segment of the amount of Americans that are there. You know, when you look at the mess that exists in Iraq today, what caused that mess?
That would have been going into Iraq.
Remember bombing the place back into the Stone Age. You know, eliminating its leadership, eliminating all aspects of control in that country, and allowing the Shiites in Tehran to take control of that country. We bombed Iraq into Iranian hands, and so now our solution for that is to start bombing Iraq again. We learned nothing.
I'm without words. I think it was you that actually went to the White House, wasn't it, and had a discussion with Bush as to why not to go into Iraq and everything you said.
It
just absolutely played out. I was watching a couple of different naval battles and just considering scripture, while I watched them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And realizing that you know, Yahweh doesn't really have a dog in this fight, and also realizing that Yahweh reports back what he's seen. He's not manipulating, battles and so forth. I watched Leyte Gulf, where a little group of basically unarmed U.S. Navy ships that had nothing more than some machine guns on them, took on the most powerful fleet, 28 ships, I think it was, from Japan.
Right.
And there were some, one excellent move was the guy, he had smoke stacks. He just had smoke laid out so it would confuse them. And he attacked with a nothing 10-10 going up against heavy cruisers and the biggest battleship in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it confused the Japanese to the point they thought they were being sucked into a war, sucked into a battle where they were going to be destroyed. They thought they were fighting Halsey's fleet. And they ran.
Right.
And I thought, you know, if the Japanese if the Japanese had just read Yasha Ya and right. understood it, they would have known not to get into naval battles with America, because in the end, the U.S. has
Navy,
the largest military in the world, and they're controlling other countries. And that's what Yasha Ya says. And had they just known that, it would have been all over. They wouldn't have done it. And it's, I mean, it's the same thing with Midway, which was the big win. But actually, those were both big wins.
And, you know,
and of course, one was done with nothing.
Midway is that you know it's portrayed as a great victory for America, and because America did sink more of the Japanese carriers than
three to
American
one.
Carriers were sunk. But the fact of the matter is, that was the dumbest decision America has ever made. It was absolutely suicidal to go into a vastly superior enemy, ill-prepared, and expect luck to prevail so that you will win. We'd lose that battle 9 times out of 10. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. One of the really sad stories that came out this week was one of the little girls that was enslaved and then became rape fodder for the Islamic State escaped to tell her story to the media. And the reporter here said that having reported on war for most of his life, that he was ill-prepared for what she had to say. And how he says, after more than a decade of reporting on conflict, wars, I was still ill-prepared to hear the scale of the kidnapping and modern-day enslavement. And it is so pervasive in Islam, and we just don't want to confront it. You know, yesterday's show, I kept on saying, you've got to be able to look at this. Got to look at it right in the eye and deal with it. You know, you don't sweep this aside. Don't glance away. In this particular case, it said suddenly the words of this 19-year-old girl who was imprisoned by the Islamic State he said, whom I had interviewed last weekend in a Kurdish prison in northern Syria, made sense. Said the young woman, horribly disfigured from bullet wounds, horribly disfigured from bullet wounds to his abdomen and arm, that he received during his year of fighting on the front lines, described how the Islamic State attracts recruits and offers cash and wives. So if you join the Islamic State, they offer you a sign-up bonus, kind of like the GI Bill, I guess, and they offer you wives. The wives are these enslaved girls that they're the same thing that Muhammad did. You know, you fight jihad for me, and you can rape anybody that we give to you. The Islamic State actually justified its enslavement and the rape of the Yazidi women in its online magazine. What they did is they talked about how Muhammad and Allah engaged in the same practice. And then it says here, one should remember that enslaving the families of the kuffar, the infidels, and taking their women as concubines is a firmly established aspect of the Sharia, or Islamic law, the group announced in its publication, Dabiq. It's true. Sharia is based entirely on Muhammad's example. Sharia is Islamic law. It is based upon what Muhammad said and did. And Muhammad enslaved little girls for the purpose of sex, rape. Now, why is it then this journalist can't make the connection between this horrible treatment of women, their enslavement, and their subsequent continuous rape, and the religion of Islam? It's right
before
their
correctness. Political correctness. Yeah.
So he's going to dumb himself down. He's going to put himself in a position where he's going to risk his life in a war zone, but yet he's not going to explain the motivations for the war. He's going to report on rape and modern enslavement of women, and yet he is not going to report on the cause of it. In fact, he doesn't. I mean, there's three more sentences in this article, none of which make the connection. He says that in the town that he was in, all 100 of the Yazidi women rescued from the Islamic State were systematically raped. And they were all raped by many different men. The 19-year-old girl that he spoke to in Iraqi Kurdistan was deeply traumatized. By the way, she was thrown after she escaped in a Kurdish prison because as a rape victim, she is she's guilty. And she was incapable of showing any joy or any humor. Her mother and two brothers, one is being held captive by the Islamic State, the other have been killed by them. Asked what she would say if she met the 70-year-old Muslim man who took her home and ordered her to convert to Islam at gunpoint and then raped her, he said, "I would not want to say anything to him. I just want to kill him."
Well, it's striking to me that, I heard a boss said the other day that Israel's dragging religion into this war. Really? pretty sure it was IS cutting off all those infidels' heads in the name of Islam, wasn't it? I mean, it's shocking.
Yeah, it is. It's truly shocking how despicable this religion is and this little girl's honest and appropriate response. And yet the world looks away.